From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Social media giant Facebook, which recently changed its name to Meta, reported that it eliminated what it called a network of trolling accounts aimed at national audiences in Nicaragua. This happened days before this weekend's presidential and legislative elections across that country. However, activists and supporters of the government allege that their accounts were closed without prior notice and said they are not trolls, but actual human beings. This was Sandinista activist Sigilia Sevilla, one of those affected by the ban, reacting to the accusation that she's a troll.
Mi nombre es Ligia Sevilla. No soy un bot, no soy un troll, y he sido censurada de mis redes sociales. ¿Acaso Facebook no nos permite ser sandinista?
She said, my name is Ilya Sevilla. I am not a bot, I am not a troll, and my social media accounts were censored. Maybe Facebook doesn't allow us to be sandinistas. That sound came to us courtesy of journalist Ben Norton, who tweeted it. Meta said that the action of these alleged trolls was a national operation with links to multiple government institutions and the Sandinistas. In a statement, Facebook said, quote, we see no evidence of foreign actors behind this campaign, closed quote. It said it eliminated 937 of what it called false accounts and deleted 140 pages, 24 groups, and 363 Instagram accounts, which they said all belonged to the same network. Nicaragua has been the target of economic and media sanctions by the U.S. and the EU. Meta Company's decision to block the supporters of the Sandinista government days before the election appears to be more than coincidental. Facebook has acted in this way before. In one example, it censored user accounts calling for an intifada by Palestinians in the territories against the Israeli government. Facebook has also designated certain political actors, such as Hezbollah and the Syrian Arab Republic government, as terrorist organizations. It closed the accounts of television stations, such as Lebanese news outlet Al-Mayadeen, two of the Syrian national broadcasters, Sama TV and Ad-Dunya, and the private Syrian channel Al-Ikhbariya. The company has also assisted various groups attempting to overthrow the legitimately elected government of Syrian Arab Republic. We will be speaking with a group of journalists in the next day or two in Nicaragua who are there to monitor the elections and report on some of the other activities taking place around them. The spokesperson for Russia's foreign ministry, Maria Zakharova, had her weekly press conference in Moscow on Wednesday, and we bring you as much of that as time allows.
And now moving on to relevant international situation. We strongly condemn the terrorist attacks which took place yesterday on the 2nd of November on the part of ISIL next to the military hospital in Kabul, which took lives of 20 people and over 40 were wounded. And we extend our condolences to the family and close ones of the deceased and hope everyone will get well soon. And we note the attempts by the Afghani government to provide security and ensure normal, peaceful life in the eastern province of Nangarhar. Over 60 ISIS fighters surrendered to Taliban authorities, and a central bank made a declaration of the plans to introduce Islamic banking, given that its Afghan national actives have been frozen, and other details of the affairs. The temporary authorities have assigned a new president of its Academy of Sciences, and mass media also received information about the readiness of National Resistance Front to renew military activity with the Taliban forces. And we also hear that head of this resistance, Ahmad Massoud, is in Tajikistan, and we think that at this stage different ethno-political forces of the country need to refrain from actions which could provoke inter-Afghani conflict. and should look for ways towards mutual understanding and national reconciliation to reestablish peace, security, and stability in Afghanistan and the neighboring region. The situation in Ethiopia, in Tigray, we are worried about the situation there. And there, as well as in Afar and Amhara, we see clashes between governmental forces, Tigray Defense Forces, with Tigray Defense Forces. And we see fighting around Odessa and Kambodja, which leads to new loss of human life and hard humanitarian consequences for the population, as well as for the regions touched by the conflict. And we think that the parties of the inter-Ethiopian force confrontation need to demonstrate political will and achieve as soon as possible a ceasefire in order to establish step-by-step social and economic stabilization in Ethiopia. And we proceed from the idea that maintaining unity and territorial integrity in this state has no alternatives for settling all issues. And I would also like to touch upon, just like we did on the previous briefing, on the results of the fourth summit Russia-ASEAN, which took place on 28th of October and was devoted to 30th anniversary of Russia-ASEAN relations. And as you know, the meeting, the negotiations between the heads of the states of the Group of 10 was taking place with the participation of our president, and the development of our dialogue with the association, which was elevated to strategic partnership 2018, is one of our priorities in Asia-Pacific region, and Russian ASEAN share the philosophy on multilateral, equal, inclusive cooperation. And we foster the regional security architecture created by ASEAN, which unfortunately now is under some serious pressure. This document reflects the spirit of maintaining the common space without any division lines and is aimed at developing vast geographical processes for synergy of our integrational push, potentials of the Great Eurasia and the decisions made at the summit, and the dialogue between leaders demonstrates their availability for bringing closer their positions and working at such platforms as ASEAN, EAEU, CSCO, SCO for some seamless connecting contour, which would involve specific platforms and practical initiatives to establish the stability of the region. Positive pragmatic cooperation on a wide range of topics is the gist of the comprehensive plan adopted by the leaders of Russia and ASEAN for 2021-2025, which provides for specific joint efforts for the foreseeable future, and it establishes measures in policy and security, as well as trade and economics, and establishes tasks in energy, transportation, environment, fight against pandemics, emergency response, culture, youth context, and much more. There is a specific focus on science-driven and high-tech segments, including digital economy and ICT. It's especially important in this respect, as we see it, the year 2022, which was declared at the summit the year of scientific and technological cooperation between Russia and ASEAN. Traditionally, our meetings at the highest level include extensive negotiations on countering new threats and challenges. In this case, we focused on the fight against the global drug threat based on common approaches, which were reflected in one of the joint declarations of the summit, specifically on the third summit in 2018, where the leaders focused on security of the use of ICT. And a part was the negotiation of the Group of 10 to overcome the coronavirus pandemic, both in bilateral format and as part of the work of multilateral organizations, and we will inform you about the implementation of the agreements achieved on the summit. And I would also like to say some words about the Russia-Chinese draft resolution regarding DPRK on 29th of October, Russia and China presented to the Security Council of the United Nations a joint draft political and humanitarian resolution on DPRK. Its essence is introducing corrections to international sanctions regime in humanitarian sphere and other civilian spheres which have nothing to do with the North Korean nuclear program. On various occasions, we noted that the need to reconsider is overdue, given the steps undertaken by Pyongyang since 2018 towards denuclearization, including respecting the moratorium on nuclear tests and launches of intercontinental ballistic missiles, as well as given the difficult humanitarian situation in country. And we're convinced that adopting this resolution will reestablish the confidence between the involved states and will stimulate the reanimation of multilateral political dialogue, which is the only way towards a comprehensive settlement of the Korean Peninsula issue. Moreover, Russian-Chinese document is aimed at fostering international efforts to helping DPRK in overcoming the coronavirus infection. Security Council must adequately react to the fact that decisive, but and as we know, biased, going outside of the need to extended interpretation of those decisions strikes hard the health system of North Korea, and so we expect work on this resolution and some constructive proposals from our colleagues in Security Council, and we hope that they are ready to provide and mobilize humanitarian help to DPRK's population and to reestablish negotiation process on the peninsula.
One more topic related to the activities of the UN Security Council on the 29th of October. The Russian Federation abstained during the voting on the draft resolution prepared by the United States on the extension of the mandate of the UN mission for the referendum in Western Sahara till the 31st of October 2021. The delegation of Tunis acted the same, and the mandate was extended. Once again, the draft included some wording implying for the deviation from the impartial and unbiased positions on the settlement in this area, in this region. Our remarks were ignored, and we believe that it's important to find mutually beneficial solutions that would imply for the self-determination of the people of Western Sahara within the framework of the procedures in compliance with the principles and goals of the UN Charter. At the same time, we confirm our support for the UN mission on the referendum in Western Sahara that plays a stabilizing role in the region and facilitates the promotion of the peaceful process and the renewal of dialogue between the parties. We also paid attention to some information and I'm talking about the information published in the American mass media claiming that Russia is allegedly mobilizing army towards its frontiers with Ukraine. It wasn't a single fake, but a fake campaign in three American mass media, at least three editions. Politico, Washington Post, and Foreign Policy published right on cue some material infested with panic saying that Russia mobilized army towards its border with Ukraine. All the comments, as journalists say, are given to only one source, and the leaking information is from the closed cabinets of Pentagon, of the White House and State Department. And it was said that the sources were not entitled to speak in public. Of course, it's obvious they were not entitled to do it, because otherwise they would have to explain themselves in public. And the only possible way to explain was to say that everything was a lie. And the only named source is Anton Semerlot, the spokesperson of the American Ministry of Defense, and he said the following to the journalist: "We cannot talk about the intentions of Russia," unquoted. So there is at least some amount of truth. Moreover, there are quotes of the Minister of Defense of Ukraine. That is the most interesting thing, because it seems like American guides hadn't been received by the Minister of Defense of Ukraine, and maybe they were just not aware of the new trends, and that's why the Ukrainian military just decided to follow their own path, because maybe they hadn't been informed. So it's difficult to understand what was going on, but as a result, the Minister of Defense of Ukraine openly refuted the claims of American journalists on mobilizing troops towards the borders of Ukraine. I would like to thank the additions that preserved the basic professional honor, and they published the real information, destroying the conspirological picture presented by other mass media. But I believe it would be a lesson to the editions that organized this fake campaign. And the situation went further. Betsy Swan and Paul McCleary from Politico published pictures that, according to them, were to prove aggressive intentions of Moscow. But as Russian journalists found out, and you can do it yourself if you have an access to internet and to the Atlas of Russia, pictures of these tanks near the border with Ukraine were in reality satellite images taken near the city of Yeln, which is located hundreds of kilometers from Ukraine. What can I say? The journalists from the United States were glad to publish this fake information, calling into questions any reason. And at the same time, they took these materials from some TikTok account, and they referred to bloggers from Voronezh, but nobody addressed us. And I believe that they didn't address anyone representing Russia. But it's happened just as the tradition goes. When such information is prepared, nobody asks for the official stance of a country. And as this editions are aware, we always prepare expeditiously any kind of material, and we would be glad to help them to understand what was the truth and what wasn't. And bearing in mind the dynamic that we are witnessing in the American mass media, I wouldn't be surprised to see in the near future photographs of a tank column of T-34 near the maritime borders of Belarus, for example. Let's proceed. We will talk about the International Award of UNESCO, and on the 15th of November, the headquarters of UNESCO in Paris hosted on the margins of the 71st session of the General Conference of its organization, it will host the first ceremony of UNESCO Russian Mendeleev International Prize in the Basic Science. This project has already been established as a follow-up of the year of the periodic table of chemical elements established by the Institute of Russia in 2019, and it is biggest of our common awards with UNESCO. Its prize fund amounts to $500,000. The establishment of the prize of Mendeleev is to promote the importance of the discoveries by this scientist and to highlight the importance of basic science and the importance of the international cooperation in solving the most acute global modern problems. This year, this prize has been given to two big scientists, academic Yuri Oganesyan from Russia and Professor Vincenzo Balzani from Italy. The decision was made on the basis of the recommendation of the international jury, including seven well-known scientists. Academic Yuri Oganesyan is the only living scientist in whose honor an element of the periodic table of chemical elements was named Element 118. This event seemed to be one of the key events at the Conference General of the organization, and the prize will be awarded by Secretary General of UNESCO Audrey Azoulay, and we hope that you will take part in the ceremony and that you will broadcast it. Another important event on the 14th of November, the Russian Geographical Society, with the support of the Russian Foreign Minister and Russian Trudnichev, will conduct a large-scale international awareness-raising event, the Geographical Dictation 2021, initiated by Russian President Putin, who is also the president of the Board of Trustees of the Geographical Society's Geographical Dictation, takes place annually since 2015. It has an awareness-raising character, and it is aimed at promoting knowledge in geography and to increase interest to science. The participants respond anonymously to questions on the Russian geography and notes do not matter. Over 6 years of its existence, the project united about 1.8 million people. In 2017, the dictation has become for the first time international. It was written in 21 countries of the world. In 2020, the number of participating countries, including Russia, amounted to 110, and the event took place on all the continents except for Antarctic and even in space. The online versions of it were translated into 10 languages of the world: English, French, German, Spanish, Arabic, Italian, Portuguese, Chinese, Turkish, and Hindi. This year, one of the most unusual venues of the dictation is the floating energy block Academic Lomonosov, train Nizhny Novgorod, Moscow, ship museum Crater Aurora, and the flight control center and all extraction platforms in the Caspian Sea, and the reservation of Katun. The geographical dictation may also be written in the internet. The online version will start on the same day and will last for several days for all the people who want to check their knowledge to be able to participate. It will last since the 14th of November till the 24th of November. I invite all those who want to take part in the dictation to participate in it and to check their knowledge. And I'm ready to proceed to your question. Is Moskva Buku here? Do we have Moskva Buku? Hello, Maria Vladimirovna. Thank you very much. My first question. On the 9th of October, it's the anniversary of signing by the leaders of Armenia and Azerbaijan of the landmark trilateral declaration on Nagorno-Karabakh settlement. How does the Russian Foreign Ministry assess the progress in its implementation, and what does it consider as achievements in the settlement since the declaration was signed, and can we expect the signing of new documents? I would like to say that we are going to give detailed comments next week when it will be the anniversary of the adoption of this declaration. Now I may say that we continue the work on all tracks. The forthcoming anniversary of the adoption of this declaration on the complete ceasefire and all the military actions in the area of Nagorno-Karabakh was discussed during telephone talks with Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov, with his counterpart from Armenia on the 1st of November, and with his counterpart from Azerbaijan on the 2nd of November. The ministers unanimously agreed that over the last year the situation stabilized, the ceasefire regime is observed, and Baku and Yerevan highly appreciate the role of the Russian peacekeepers. Separate incidents are settled through the well-established channels of cooperation. There are efforts to deblock transport ties, and on the 20th of October, Moscow hosted the 8th meeting of the Trilateral Working Group under the co-chairmanship of Vice Prime Ministers of Russia, Azerbaijan, and Armenia. We continue to maintain contacts between our Ministers of Foreign Affairs, Minister of Defense, and border services of the three countries, and we believe that the complex solution of the problem is the speediest launch of the delimitization process of on the border, and there is also active work conducted by the OSCE Minsk group, and we will inform you on press releases. And could you tell me whether new documents are going to be signed? I don't have such information. Could you specify what documents you may mean? You know that there are talks, that maybe new meetings between the leaders of Russia and Azerbaijan may take place. So I think that if the leaders have the relevant information, the press services will share it. And now the ministries that I've mentioned conduct the everyday work to implement the documents that I've mentioned and that require their realization. I would like to mention the second question. The Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Russia and Turkey on the margins of G20 summit in Rome discussed the prospects of launching in Southern Caucasus a mechanism of 3+3. Can we talk about unanimity on this issue between Russia and Turkey? And are there any developments, any arrangements as to when the format can be put into practice? Should we expect consultations on the level of Russia, Turkey and Iran as big neighbors of Trans-Caucasian states? Is there a rough idea as to how we should proceed towards putting the format into practice? I believe that at the previous or the previous briefing or before that, I had answered this question. Once again, we support the idea proposed by the presidents of Azerbaijan and Turkey of establishing such regional mechanism 3+3 that would include countries of Southern Caucasus and its neighbors Azerbaijan, Armenia, Georgia, Russia, Turkey, and Iran. And we believe that it's high time, and I'll highlight it once again, to put these plans into practice. The development of multilateral regional cooperation meets the interests of all these suggested participants of this format. In our opinion, its launch will contribute to improving confidence in interstate relations, in the settlement of contradictions, in the implementation of the economic and transport potential of the region. There are a lot of questions, and now they got new developments, the problems that we have right now, the situation with the pandemic that introduced some changes into the emphasis we should make. So we will come up with the new solutions, I believe.
Thank you very much. And do we have the Moscow Post here? Yes, good afternoon. Can you hear me? Yes. I would like to ask the following question. Could we tell us about the dialogue between Russia and the U.S. On cybersecurity? The American side seems to have given Russia information about hackers. Do they expect something in response? At the end of October, the Secretary of the Security Council, Nikolai Patrushev, talked about cyber attacks against Russian units, Russian objects, including nuclear energy units. What is happening along the line of the ministerial cooperation here? I can say two things. The dialogue between our countries on information security is definitely being carried out. And the second thing is it's conducted under the auspices of the security councils of the two countries. The specific details of the dialogue, specific interchanges, given its specifics, at this stage cannot be uncovered or publicized. And once there will be such a possibility to report the work conducted, maybe on the part of the Security Council or upon the charge of the relevant agencies, it will be talked about. But I would like to underscore that the Presidential Administration and Security Council do conduct dialogue with our American partners on this topic.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.